Let's Talk About is recorded and produced in Treaty 1 territories, on the original lands of the Anishinaabe, Cree, Oji-Cree, Dakota, and Dene peoples, and on the homeland of the Métis Nation. Thank you very much for listening. So, welcome back to Let's Talk About and the Exploring the Charter series. I'm going to just jump right into this one because we are going into the legal rights today. And this is perhaps, well, looking at it, it's the second longest section of the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. It's actually only a little bit shorter than the Official Languages of Canada section. So this section deals with quite a few things, actually. It deals with treatment of Canadians and what we as Canadian citizens expect and must be done for and to us when we come across the legal system. It is the rights that ensure our legal sovereignty as individuals and our freedoms and liberty. So this might be a two-parter within a series because this part is so long and it's so dense. So I'm going to go line by line and kind of explain, because some of these sections are very important, and the interpretations of them have become increasingly important in recent times. So, Section 7. Everyone has the right to life, liberty, and security of the person, and the right not to be deprived thereof except in accordance with the principles of fundamental justice. Now, this is one of the very, very important ones today in 2021. It's been brought up. It's kind of the one that those who do understand what's actually in the Charter or have kind of had a cursory reading of the Charter tend to point to. One of the ones that gets thrown back and forth in the COVID debate with vaccines and no vaccines and the lockdown measures and things like that. So liberty and security of the person. So security of the person is really what's on the box, what's on the label. It's to be safe and secure and have control and security and wholeness of your own body. You think of like right to life and things like that. You as an individual, as a Canadian citizen, have the right to have your own security as a person. So things like the old adage of, you know, your rights and where my nose begins. You know, you're free to swing your arms around, but as soon as it connects with the end of my nose, then my rights are being infringed upon. That's kind of the same thing. So you have a right to safety and health. You, as a person, have the right to be protected and to, you know, people can't do things that directly impact the security of your body. So that's why things like, you know, driving, like DUIs, that's why you're not allowed to drive while intoxicated. You're not allowed to speed because you are putting the security of those around you at risk when you take those actions. You're expressing your right to life, liberty, and security of the person, but you are, you know, fundamental justice, you are coming afoul of the legal system because your exercise of your freedoms is infringing upon or potentially infringing upon the freedoms of others and the rights of others. So same thing with, you know, COVID. You know, you can make the argument that by going out while you're infected with COVID-19 and not wearing a mask, you are threatening the security of those around you. You're putting other people at risk, and you're infringing upon their rights because they didn't choose. You know, they have the right to not be infected by COVID-19 or not be put in a situation where they're infected by COVID-19. So those that are infected cannot spread it, more or less. So it's one of those things where your rights become a balancing act because you can't live in a society where everyone's lives are totally free, because your rights do come into conflict with the rights of others. That's kind of one of the fundamental issues when we're talking about, you know, rights and freedoms. So Section 8, everyone has the right to be secure against unreasonable search and seizure. You know, the police and the government, or the government acting through the police, can't just enter your home arbitrarily. They can't pull you over and start searching your car or searching your person without, you know, without reason. Because the operative word of unreasonable. There are ways that this has been gotten around, and that's where we get into issues of, like, driving while black and driving while indigenous, and the ways that officers and police and the legal profession gets around what's reasonable and conditions, reasonable suspicion and things like that. They need to essentially see something in order to act upon it. And then you get into, like, oh, I smelled something. I smelled marijuana, so I'm going to search your car. So they can't actually, like, search you or search your house without the reason a warrant exists is because they have been given legal reason. They have proved reason that it is reasonable that they need to search your house or your car or your possessions for something or seize something of yours. They can't just take, you know, officers can't just take something from you. Because that right protects that. It is fundamental that you, as part of, like, having security of the person, that you just can't be accosted and searched for no reason. You need to provide a reason and have it be reasonable and have legal backing. Section 9, everyone has the right to not be arbitrarily detained or imprisoned. That's another big one that's brought up with lockdown measures, where technically you're not being detained. Being detained unreasonably would mean the police come, grab you out of your home, throw you in a cell, and you can't leave. The fact that you can still leave your house and go around places and go to the store and all of that means that you're not being unreasonably detained because you can leave. You have the ability to move, and it goes back to last week with the mobility rights. Not being allowed on an airplane because you're unvaccinated is not violating your ability to move around in Canada and freedom of movement. What it's just a certain privilege, a privilege to fly on an airplane that's being impinged upon. Same thing here. You're still able. You're not being unreasonably detained. You are still a free person. You have not been charged with anything. You're not being held against your will. You're still able to move around. You're still able to leave. So you're not being detained. But essentially, what Section 9 covers is, you know, the police can't just arbitrarily grab you off the street and throw you in the back of a van, take you and put you in a cell. You cannot be detained. You talk about, you know, detainments and disappearances in other countries where they've been going through, you know, military dictatorships and things and social upheavals and legal upheavals, where detainment, you know, the Nazis did it, the USSR did it, and also the United States did it. They detained people. They found a legal loophole where they could detain individuals in their own country in some ways. There are legal avenues where the U.S. has been allowed to detain people unreasonably. But in Canada, we do have this right. I don't know the legal precedent for being detained in Canada, but I know you can probably make a good charter argument citing Section 9. And here is Section 10, where we start to get into when people run afoul of the criminal justice system. If you've ever heard of Miranda rights, this is kind of where we're getting into that territory. So if you're ever found to have run afoul of the Canadian criminal justice system, here are the rights that you have as a Canadian citizen when you are being arrested or have been arrested. So section 10. Everyone has the right or on arrest or detention, A, to be informed promptly of the reasons therefor, B, to retain and instruct counsel without delay and to be informed of that right, and C, to have the validity of detention determined by way of habeas corpus, and to be released if the detention is not lawful. So, A, you need to be told why you're being arrested to be arrested. And you have to be told quickly. So this is where we're getting into that reason for detention, unreasonableness. You need to, you know, they can't just detain you and then 6 hours later or 6 days later tell you, oh, yeah, we detained you for a broken taillight. You need to be told why you're being arrested. You need to be told why and given a reason. That's just the way that it works, because if not, then they're not providing a reasonable, they're not, you know, the detainment is not reasonable. So then part B, so 10B, that's retaining and instructing counsel without delay. So if you need a, if you want a lawyer, you need to be told that you have the right to a lawyer. Think of the Miranda rights that are read on like CSI and stuff. You are to be instructed that you can have a lawyer. And if you ever watched any of those like criminal interrogation videos on YouTube, like JCS criminology, sometimes police try and get around that and talk around it. But conventional wisdom is if the police have you and they detain you somehow, they take you in for questioning, get a lawyer, just get a lawyer, innocent or not, guilty or not, get a lawyer. They will instruct you what to say and what not to say just to protect yourself. But you're supposed to within a reasonable amount of time, be able to get a lawyer and get them in there to help you. And they can't question you without that lawyer. And you are not legally required to answer questions without a lawyer present. 10C, to have the validity of detention determined by way of habeas corpus and to be released if detention is not lawful. Again, you need to have a proven reason and that you were at fault for something, that you had done something to require you reasonably being detained. If they cannot provide that reason in a prompt time frame and it is not lawful and not legal, they have to release you. Obviously there is precedent for other things and not being let out, and you know what is reasonable. We're actually going to discuss what is a reasonable time frame in 2021 with obviously COVID, but also a very log-jammed criminal justice system, a very understaffed criminal justice system, with the wrong incentives really. But we'll get to that in a second. But really, section 10, subsection C, you need to be given a reason, a lawful reason for why you're being detained and arrested, or else you really have to go free. Then we're going to go on to section 11. Any person charged with an offense has the right to A, to be informed without unreasonable delay of the specific offense, B, to be tried within a reasonable time, C, not to be compelled to be a witness in proceedings against that person in respect to the offense, D, to be presumed innocent until proven guilty according to the law in a fair and public hearing by an independent and impartial tribunal, E, not to be denied reasonable bail without just cause, F, except in the case of an offense under military law tried before a military tribunal to the benefit of trial by jury, where the maximum punishment for the offense is imprisonment of 5 years or more severe, or a more severe punishment. G, not to be found guilty on account of any act or omissions, unless at the time of the act or omission it constituted an offense under Canadian or international laws or was criminal according to the general principles of law recognized by the community of nations. H, if finally acquitted of the offense, not to be tried for it again, and if finally found guilty and punished for the offense, not to be tried or punished for it again, and I, if found guilty of the offense, and if the punishment for the offense has been varied between the time of commission and the time of sentencing to the benefit of a lesser punishment. All right, so let's go all the way through that. So that has to do with actually going to trial and being convicted of a certain, convicted and sentenced for certain offenses. So when you're charged with an offense, you have the right to be informed without unreasonable delay of the specific offense. That happens just in court, when you are there, they tell you that you have been found guilty and charged with something, found guilty of something, and be sentenced of something. If you're not told these things, if you're not told that you're charged, in a reasonable amount of time, then you get into some legal challenges that you're being unreasonably detained. Even though they might have a reason, you need to know what that reason is. It's your right to know what that reason is, which is just a carryover from Section 10. Subsection B, to be tried within a reasonable time. This one's a little difficult because, if you don't know this, our criminal justice system is severely backed up. Legal proceedings can take on the order of years. You can be in jail, being held without bail, or if you can't pay the bail, you are being held in jail. You're not charged officially, well, you're charged, but you're not officially sentenced with anything or have been proven guilty or innocent of anything, but you're being held for an unreasonable amount of time, for a very long period of time. You could face multiple years in jail waiting for your trial and going through the trial process under the presumption that you are innocent, you are being held. So this reasonable time frame, it was created with the intent that you can't be arrested and then charged and then just held because you're charged with something, and they can just continue delaying the sentence, the trial off and off and off and off, and just perpetually keep you in prison or keep you in jail because they don't have anything, or you've been charged with something and they don't want to go through the rigmarole of going to trial because then you're going to be found innocent and then you're going to have to leave because they want a reason to keep you in jail. So that's why the provision's in there, but it's difficult in 2021 when we have such a backed up criminal justice system, which makes going an expedited trial process very difficult. I mean, we're not anywhere near where the US is at, but we're getting there in Canada. Subsection C, not to be compelled to be a witness in proceedings against that person in respect to the offense. So you cannot be compelled to be a witness again, essentially. You cannot be compelled to be a witness. You can refuse that. You can refuse to take the stand on something. That is your legal right as a Canadian, more or less. And it's to get rid of that right is to get rid of compulsion. Like, you have to think of the context within a lot of when rights were created. Now, obviously, these rights weren't written when the U.S. Constitution was written, when they were still heavily, 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 coming out of the War for Independence, and they were heavily under the influence of the British Empire and that imperial system, that monarchical system. But for Canada as well, you think of that context when you're reading laws like this, because this is the template that is built off of, that you cannot be compelled. Forcefully compelled somehow to either by force or by coercion to testify against somebody as a witness against somebody. And nobody can be compelled to be a witness against you. That is your right as a Canadian. Section D, to be presumed innocent until proven guilty according to law in a fair and public hearing by an independent and impartial tribunal. That's just a presumption of innocence. When a person is arrested and charged with something, they still haven't been proven under the auspices of the law that they have done that thing, that they are guilty of that thing. So there's the presumption that they are innocent until proven guilty, and that you need to have an impartial tribunal. It has to be public, has to be impartial. It can't, that's where the jury selections come into play. You don't want people who are going to just charge you with something just to charge you with something, or people that have an inherent bias against you. You can't stack the jury, or you can't pick a judge that is not that is impartial to a certain case or a certain person. Section E, not to be detained, denied reasonable bail without just cause. You have to give a reason to be denied bail. If you're a flight risk or whatever, they need to provide you a reason why you're being denied bail, or that is your right as a Canadian, or they're going to have a charter right on a charter challenge on their hands. And that depends, that applies if the offense is someone where there is to be bail applied. Bail can be exorbitant amounts of money, like $5 million, whatever. But that is reasonable. That comes down to the presumption of reasonableness, and they have to provide reasons. And because the legal system is the way that it is, it kind of gets wishy-washy in terms of what is reasonable, what is legal, what's allowed, what's the precedent for things. And that is, except in the case of an offense under military law tried before a military tribunal to the benefit of trial by jury, where the maximum punishment for the offense is imprisonment of 5 years or more. So you could be denied bail if it's a military tribunal. That'd be a military tribunal. An offense done under military law. That's kind of where that comes in. They can hold you because you are under their system, and the military law operates separate from common law, which is Canadian law. You're in military court, you are a military member, you have committed an offense under the auspices of military law, and they have different rules. They have different rules in that circumstance that override some. You kind of give up certain rights, or your rights are altered slightly when you are a member of the military, more or less. And that's to the benefit of certain, when offense in the common law would have been more severe. Section G, not to be found guilty on account of any act or omission unless at the time of the act or omission it constituted an offense under Canadian and international law or was criminal according to the general principles of law recognized by the Community of Nations. So you cannot be charged with something that wasn't illegal at the time you committed it. So if you commit an act in 1963 and then it's made illegal in 2022, you can't be retroactively charged for something that you did before that thing was made illegal. And if something was illegal but then became legal, so now you can't be charged with marijuana possession if you were possessing marijuana in 2013 because it's now legal. And same thing with omissions. Omissions are kind of just like is a different distinction in acts versus omissions of criminal acts. Omissions are to omit things in the legal process is handled in a slightly different way, but it is just as important to legal proceedings. So yeah, you cannot be charged for something that was not illegal at the time you did it. Section 8 or subsection H, if finally acquitted of the offense, not to be tried for it again, and if found guilty and punished for the offense, not to be tried or punished for it again. So if you are tried for an offense, if you are charged, then tried for an offense, regardless of the outcome, guilty or innocent, you cannot be charged for that offense again later on. You can't be charged for the same crime twice. Because then you could just keep charging a person for the same crime and they just get held in prison in perpetuity, which is just ridiculous. They serve their time. You're able to commit an offense, do the crime, do the time, and have it wiped clean. Not wiped clean totally, because obviously that stays on your record and you will still have a criminal record moving forward, but you are not allowed to be charged for the same crime again. You get into situations of retrials and you have appeals, the appeal process. So you appeal to the next level of a court. So if you're found guilty, you can appeal to a higher court. If you're found guilty of a municipal court, you can appeal to a provincial court. If you're found guilty in a provincial court, you can appeal to the federal court. You can go up those ladders, and if you're found innocent, the crown can then appeal if they want to. So that process is different because you are not being retried for that crime. That offense and that trial is a complete condensed unit. They're going to try and find something else within that legal framework to charge you with, some kind of procedural issue. They lean on a procedural issue or new evidence or something that pulls the presumption, the innocent until proven guilty assumption, and it the beyond a reasonable doubt status of the evidence calls that into question or calls the integrity of the trial itself into question. So when you appeal something, you're appealing to have that entire trial thrown out and you start again. It's not retrying you for the same under the same offense where that trial is a closed unit. It's throwing that closed unit out and starting again. Because there was something that was not known at the time, or there was something wrong inherently with the structure of the trial, something procedural that happened that caused the entire trial itself to have not had integrity. So that's the only way you can get around that, the section 11 subsection H. But realistically, in day-to-day life, you cannot be tried for the same thing twice if you are found guilty or innocent. If I am guilty of an offense, and if the punishment for the offense has been varied between the time of commission and the time of sentencing to the benefit of the lesser punishment. It's just to take the if the punishment has changed, if they have changed the legal framework around what an offense is, it's like moving from like getting rid of second degree murder or first degree murder or third degree murder. If those definitions are changed, you and it, the commission is broken up or it's altered in a way where, let's say there's manslaughter and there's first degree murder and there's no middle ground. They get rid of the middle ground. They're going to the benefit of you as a Canadian, they're going to go for the lighter of the two sentences, not the harsher. They're going to go for the lighter charge, not the more significant charge. So they're not going to charge you with first degree murder if you've been found guilty of second, but they've gotten rid of second degree murder. They're going to go with manslaughter because it's just within, it's like rounding. It's a weird like rounding thing in the legal profession. And then finally, section 12, everyone has the right not to be subjected to any cruel or unusual treatment and punishment. Very self-explanatory. They can't torture you. They can't, detain you indefinitely and put you in solitary for no reason. You cannot be subjected to anything, any unreasonable punishment. 13, a witness who testifies in any proceeding has the right not to have any incriminating evidence used to incriminate that witness in any other proceeding except in a prosecution for perjury or by giving the contradictory evidence. A jury member cannot be, if they testify and they say, if you're an accomplice to something and you testify against somebody, that can't be used against you in your own trial. And if you admit to something as a witness, you cannot be charged for that thing necessarily. And admission of guilt that is done as a witness cannot be used as an admission of guilt in your own trial. And you cannot, unless it's perjury, and then that's a procedural thing. And then 14, a party or witness in any proceeding who does not understand or speak the language in which the proceedings are conducted or who is deaf has the right to the assistance of an interpreter. Very simple. If you're a witness, you require an interpreter to help you with your job as a witness. That must be provided to you. If you're a witness to a trial in Quebec and you do not speak French, you need to have a French interpreter there to help you through that process. Whether you are a witness or a defendant in a trial, that is your right as a Canadian. If you're deaf, you need to have a person who speaks ASL there to help you. And that are the legal rights. I can't believe I got through that in one sitting. It was kind of a whirlwind blitz, but that's it. Those are the legal rights you have as a Canadian. It's complicated, it's weird, but it's kind of self-explanatory when you think about it a little bit more. Next week we will be moving on to equality rights, which will be is a short section, long discussion. So stick around for that. If you're listening live on 101.5 UMFM, great songs, great shows coming up right after this one. Keep it tuned to 101.5. And if you're listening on Spotify, thank you very much for your download. As always, have yourselves a wonderful, wonderful weekend. We out.